morning. Wow, you guys should be excited. This is the last day.
At first, when I
put this here, I'm so 1984. I'm not going to use my iPad and everything because that's where your technology breaks down. Initially, when I saw the program that we received in our order, and I was last, I was kind of jittery because you just don't want to be the last person, sorry, Pastor, before lunch. Because everybody gets nervous and starts thinking about that mapped out plan of where they're going to go for lunch. And now that I've calmed down, I'm nervous again because I don't have a fancy video. I am really simple, and most of what we do usually involves engaging the room and our discussion and walk around. I'm not going to walk around because we're recording. I saw you had a nervous look on your face. I'm just explaining what we ordinarily do. So when I was thinking about this topic and saw this theme about hathography, it really took me back years ago. I'm not sure how many of you, I know she just mentioned that you were from New York, how many people are here from Louisiana or New Orleans specifically. Well, I'm originally from Birmingham, but when I got to New Orleans, this is a different kind of place. If you're just visiting, you've learned there's some different kind of things other than just the food, how they say things. In the rest of the part of the world, we say Burgundy, but here in New Orleans, they say Burgundy. Other places, we say Calliope. Here, they say Calliope. So things are different. The way that we give directions here, away from the river, to the river, across the lake. And then the years happened, and we got a new expression, and that was pre-Katrina and post-Katrina. So that has become a new expression here, but very common, because that's what people do. We have to compare, especially when we're starting to have our discussions about the environment. Well, I was here for Katrina, like a lot of us here at this conference was, and of course, just all of what you see in news, devastating, nothing new, the story, you've heard it all. And after the storm, I was reassigned to one of our national parks in Alabama, in Tuskegee, there for that site. Then I came back and discovered that I wasn't quite ready to come back to the city, so my supervisor allowed me to go back to Alabama. Came back one more time and still wasn't quite ready, so I was stationed in California in a place called Whiskey Town. Trust me, no whiskey, just water, a national recreational area. Nevertheless, it was an eye-opening experience being away. Well, going to those details, I realized eventually that I was ready to come back. And my supervisors gave me the opportunity and said, you really don't have to go back if you don't want to. We can move you to Atlanta, and we can just handle all of your projects, and you can come back to the state periodically. But no, I had to be this tree hugger, good attitude, and wanted to be a part of the rebuilding effort. And I was so excited, even though it was a devastating time, to come back and have some conversation with people, and then there was that reality. Start reaching out to some of these communities, those that were the hardest hit. And then people start looking at you crazy, saying, are you serious? Are you talking about trail development? My house was floating down the street. I lost family members. Well, at that time, I definitely wasn't prepared with how to align our mission with that of how I wanted to assist the community. So now that the years have progressed, there's so much more information that I learned that I wish I had known then, and I wouldn't have lost those opportunities to assist those individuals with whom I had contact. Well, for the most part, when people hear about the National Park Service, I don't know how to go back. That's okay. It's not necessary. When people hear the National Park Service, they're inclined to think about our national parks, naturally so. Yosemite, the Great Smoky Mountains, the Grand Canyon, and some of our sites, such as the Statue of Liberty, the Liberty Bell, Martin Luther King Center. However, there is a different part of the Park Service, the community arm of the Park Service, known as the Rivers Trails Conservation Assistance Program. Or if you're in the Northeast or sometimes in the West, Rivers and Trails, we're going through a little branding issue, so I'm not quite sure what we're supposed to be called anymore. I just go and do the assignment that we have, and that is working with communities to develop passive nature-based recreation. Well, when I meet people and I tell them that, they say, are you serious? You get paid to do that? Well, that's what I thought, too. When I was an intern and I went into a session for 300, there were 300 students. And out of those 300 students, for some reason, I was that one person selected. And I was a little hesitant in the beginning because I fell into that stereotype in that discussion. And I said, I don't want to work for the Park Service. Black people, we don't go outside. We don't go camping. We don't do this. We don't do that. But that was part of my earlier ignorance, not knowing so much of what the park service could bring to a community outside of the park. Well, part of what the RTCA program does is that we define the project's visions and the goals. So every now and again, a community or the city or the parish, usually outside of the park, they will come with an idea and say, hey, we're interested in a trail. Not quite certain about how long the trail is, what they want that trail to be made of. Is it going to be asphalt or is it going to be stone? Not really sure of what the purpose is. Sometimes people come to us and say, we just want a bike trail and a hiking trail, but they're not sure where they want to go. So part of the role of the RTCA is to work with those communities to flesh out that of what they want to do. So we start in the beginning with figuring out what the vision is and what their project goal. When we go into those areas, we also do an inventory and we map those resources. We never want to go into a community and start just deciding to design and to build, because we need to see what you have first. And then we work with what we have and then move on from there, and then we just add on accordingly, most often when the money becomes available. We do a serious effort in figuring out what our priorities are. We're working with a community right now in Louisiana where we have a community that is really, really active. However, they're an elderly population, and the parish is not so certain that they want to invest their money on that side. They want to invest it on the other side where we have a younger population of people and where the activity, which sometimes seems like a contradiction for us, because we're like, if you have the attitude and if people are eager to go there, why can't we concentrate our efforts on that side? But that's not our responsibility. Our goal is to work with those communities to figure out where their priorities should be. We also identify the key issues, crime, economic benefits, and the like. And then eventually we develop a concept plan for trails, parks, and natural areas. The National Park Service will not provide an actual plan. We usually deal with conceptual plans pretty much for the idea of liability, and we usually send that conceptual plan out to a firm to handle it. But of what we do, there are a couple of things that are really, really important, and that's engaging collaborative partners and stakeholders and designing community outreach and participation strategies. They are two of our most important concepts, because if we don't bring partners to the table to help support it, what's the likelihood that it's going to even get to the conceptual point? Partners, we don't have anybody there. We're just okay. It's just the idea that remains on the table and it remains on the shelf. But when we bring other people to the table who have money, who have ideas, who have staff, it's the likelihood that we're going to be able to implement that project. Designing community outreach and participation strategies. That's one of the most difficult parts of our job. Earlier, I mentioned to you how someone would say, I can't believe you get paid to do that job. And I forgot to tell you, it is such a great job, because once you see a project implemented, you're like, I've been a part of that vision. I've seen it from the baby steps all the way to the groundbreaking. However, there are those times when we have to put on the good face for our politicians, because they're only there for their photo opportunity. But we have to make sure that we're still respectful, that they're supportive of the efforts in the area of their constituency. And then there are those days where we drive 4 and 5 hours, and I've even done 8 hours, for a meeting that had 2 people. And I'm one of the 2 people. And you start saying, what? We could have had this conversation on the phone. But later, I started realizing that even that one person, you know, they were interested in the project, so I had to make sure that I was just as interested in hearing because their thoughts. And we start with that one, and we build on, and that's how we fall into our designing our community outreach. Well, part, for the sake of this public health conference, part of what the National Park Service started doing was figuring out the strategies of how we can start having conversation with different groups of people at our meeting. Because when I would go to these meetings, not just the 1 and 2 meetings, most of the time when we would help communities, they were full of middle-aged white men, and nothing wrong with that, but we didn't have anybody else. There was no one else in the room that looked like me. And when I say that, I'm not meaning all tall and voluptuous. I'm meaning there are no shades of brown, gray, red, anything. And that's not what we wanted. And that's actually how we began the process of figuring out how can we bring other partners. Well, the natural fit for us, no pun intended, was that of the health, of the public health realm. It's such a fit for us, especially for people when we deal with communities where they just don't always have access to gyms. And going in cars and driving to a trail. You shouldn't always have to drive to a trail. We should, if possible, because it's difficult to retrofit. We are in a different time where there's a lot of development, a lot of new homes, a lot of businesses, more condos. So it's very difficult to say you're going to throw a bike lane. And I don't know how many of you have been on a bike lane here in New Orleans, but that's a nervous experience. Even when you work in that realm, because I work with that community all the time, and I swear I get so nervous every day because we haven't always done a great job of retrofitting how we put those lanes back in an area that's already been designed, nor have we done a great job of educating. Well, as I've said before, the partnership with the realm of public health is a natural one because it goes all the way back to the 1800s. Most of our parks, like Central Park, Yellowstone, Hot Springs, most of them came out of the Industrial Revolution, and they were created, you know, to stave off some of the effects of it and so that people could have another place to heal and just enjoy the natural resource. Well, over the years, we pretty much got away from that partnership and realizing that it was a place to go relax and it was a place to go walk and a place that we deemed to be healthy. And we went back to the National Park Service's mission of preserving our natural resources. Well, fast forward a few years and we get to this RTCA program and some of our other National Park Service staff, and we end up with programs like the YMCA's Healthy Living, Healthy Communities, the First Lady's Initiative with Let's Move Outside, the Healthy Parks, Healthy People Initiative, and Park Prescription. Some of those have taken place within the 2000s, most often lately, the Healthy Parks, Healthy People one. And our Park Prescription, which was initiated by one of our RTCA staff. She no longer works with us because she works primarily with the health. So we have a lot of those efforts that are going on. And I mentioned earlier to you who has been our audience. And in addition to the race and the age of people, we've dealt with city and county and parish staff. But we have failed to introduce diverse races of people, public health professionals, educators, ministers, and youth organization leaders. If we're going to work with these communities, it's not enough for us just to work with officials. We have to work with the people who are doing the on-the-ground work, the people who can get our message out. And what we found when we did our research when I was developing the toolkit, and she mentioned Dr. Lowe mentioned the toolkit earlier, it's actually an internal document so that our RTCA staff figure out how we need to work when we go to different areas of the nation, because working in diverse and or urban communities, because sometimes people confuse that definition and they think that every time we say urban that means black or that means hood or that means ghetto. And I've been to some places that are quite urban and there are none of those things. When we talk about it, we often mean the density, not necessarily the population or the race of people. And that's where we have to have a lot of conversation about the definitions, because we get so lost in what we should do. So when we talk about our message, the message, this is how it ends up a great deal of times when we go to meetings, whether or not we're talking public health or recreation. On the recreation end, we're telling people, come on, you need to come outside. Let's go canoeing, kayaking. Let's go ride a bike, all of those things in our casual conversation. And by the way, it's going to help you. It's going to help you be healthy, and it's going to put you in a peaceful state, and it's going to be great for your heart. And then other times when we are on our public health kick, we're saying, you know, you need to go outside because you've been eating you have not been eating well since you've been in New Orleans. You need to go walking along that river walk and get some of that po' boy fat off of you. And we're yelling, yelling, yelling. And by the time people hear all of the messages that we give them, it's like this. You know, we don't want to hear anymore because we've managed to scold people and pacify them little so much that they're like, we don't care. And they just continue to do what they've done for the most part. So when we talk about delivering our message, we often talk about statistics. I figure that I am a strange person that I really, really love statistics. I have no idea why I love them, but I love seeing the numbers. But what I found out is that when we took them to our communities, they cared nothing about statistics. They didn't care about cardiovascular health, the stroke rate, none of that. Most of the time, statistics work in the communities where people want to know about property value, and when I'm dealing with business owners and they want to know what the bottom line is going to be, that's the only time the numbers. But most of the time, when we develop a fact sheet, we go there with all the various statistics, and it goes in one ear and out the next, and people, we have done nothing. So just as Ben Scully said, the statistics are used to the same way that a drunk is going to use a lamppost, just to support it. It's not going to illuminate anything for the audiences with whom I work. Imagery. A lot of times when I go to the community, it's a little off balance, because on one hand, I go there and we have all these pictures, and none of the pictures look like this diverse area that we continue to talk about. But then when I present my health information, we're all over the health information. It says you're obese, and even though they have the black band over the eyes, we know that it's a black lady, or we know that it's a Latino person, or all these different races they're represented, and not necessarily in the best light when we were given our health material. So we started having a discussion about how do we find a balance in it, that our persuasion should be a little more casual, and that we should go to people and start figuring out what our conversation should be instead of making the decision that we would have such abrupt marketing material that it turned people away completely. Well, that's a little later on. So part of the steps that I was going to mention about how we should be doing things is that when we go, we have to figure out a communication strategy and figure out the method, the best way. We have to recognize that one size does not fit all. Now, we've had many opportunities, I'm sure, and I see a lot of ladies in here. You've probably purchased some items, and they said one size fits all, and we know that that is not true. And even some of these men, we've had some hats that we purchased. I can testify to you myself that I purchased a hat that did not fit on my head. I'm not going to say that it's because I have a big head. I'll just say that it's because I have a big brain, and maybe we had to adjust the straps some kind of way. Well, that's the same way we feel when we go into communities. What we have been doing for years is we go there with our cookie cutter fact sheet, and we give people the information on economic benefits, why they should do it, you know, health benefits, all of that, property value, the length, and all those things, where some of those communities did not care because we failed to do our research on what was available. There's no need for me to suggest a paddling trail in your community if there is no water nearby. That doesn't make any sense. But we were still going to communities with fact sheets that had how to develop a water trail, how to do this greenway, when there was no way for us to develop it. So what we had to do is start doing a better job of customizing what our approach. We had to start figuring out, who were we talking to? Were we talking to a community that was full of Latinas and Latinos? Or was it just an African-American community? Or was there a mixture of it? The next thing we had to do was to figure out how to respect the historical beliefs or connections to the past while embracing our goals for the future. It's important that we respect what people have been exposed to. Years ago, and it sounds so silly now, it sounded silly then when I was asked, but I was at a conference and I was the only African American person there, which happens a great deal in our field when you do environmental tasks. And for RTCA staff, there were about 85 of us nationally. The number has gone down now since we've had a lot of people retire. But out of that 85, there were only two of us black. So at that meeting, I'm the only one there. So there are only two. There are a couple of things that happen when you're the only representative for your race in a meeting. The first thing is people always know when you skip the meeting or when you decide to leave early, because they recognize that, that one and only, she didn't come to this session and she's out. The second thing that happens is they make you the representative for all the black people in the world, or all the Asian people, all Latino people. They ask you the question, and I can remember being so engaged in the conversation, and before I knew it, the speaker turned around and he said, "Stacy, can you please tell us why we can't get black people to come to the parks?" And I was just stunned. I should have been stunned because I really was paying attention. I just was stunned at having to be the representative because I did not know why other black people weren't going to the park. I knew why we didn't go because we never saw a park. We played with we rode bikes outside and all that, but we had never seen or heard anybody talk about a national park. And it wasn't like I wasn't from this great middle-class family that was exposed. We just had never heard of it. And so... when I was there, and he answered, and it's so crazy now, and I'm almost embarrassed to tell you, but I'm going to tell you because we have to grow from what we've said. I said, well, since he made me the Moses of my people, I said, my people in the past have not had a good relationship with the woods. A lot of bad things have happened to the woods, in the woods. Funny, but you know, it was true. It was true. When I started speaking with elderly communities, they did not have a good perception of it. And even though it sounded so crazy there for me to say it, and even years later, and this is the first time I've said it in 8 years, it was still so true. And later on, I was like, we have to respect the belief of those. And if we can't encourage them to go, then it's okay to move toward other activities. Because that's another part of what we do. We start using gateway activities to figure out how we can bridge the gap and or the connection to get people involved in health opportunities outside. We have to remain cognizant of the trends in recreation. Well, for all these years, I only made my 15th anniversary in August, but for all this time, we've pretty much worked on developing equestrian trails, bicycling trails, pedestrian, the usual. However, it's changing with our generation. Now people are wakeboarding and they are skateboarding, and we're moving to skateboarding movement. We have to be a part of it because, you know, sometimes if you don't join it, then you just get lost and some of what you've been doing for years becomes antiquated. Well, we still figure it out to be a health benefit because you don't just drive the skateboard the whole time. You got to jump on it, you got to run, you got to do something. There's something. So we try to find an opportunity in the trends that are happening and just try to stay abreast of them and to make sure that we always remain engaged with the community, whether or not they're youth, because that's what they're doing now. They're figuring out new ways to change recreation for their good. And lastly, we have to create connections with non-traditional partners. Years ago, I was invited by the Louisiana Department of Cardiovascular Health to be considered as a non-traditional park. And for the most part, I'd just go there and attend the meetings, and they would ask about how do we involve the Park Service. And we would pretty much just tell what the Park Service did and talk about trails. But we didn't really have any action behind it. So, but we did start the conversation. Now we know that we get beyond, as I mentioned earlier, just dealing with public health, that we go back to our ministers, we go to our educators. And when I say the ministers, that's because of part of our research, we found that when we deal with the African-American community, that's ordinarily where the base begins, in the church. So then we realized we need to start getting our sheets together and have a connection there. When I have a Vietnamese project, a Vietnamese partner project in New Orleans East, where their connection to the outdoors is spiritual. They wanted to do Tai Chi out along the water, develop some other connections. However, there's a treacherous part involved. They want to fish in filthy, filthy water. Well, that's where the city becomes nervous, and that's also where we come in with the education component. So there are so many things where we have to figure out where our niche is, and that's when I refer earlier to having to customize our approach and dealing with that of the elders, of what I mentioned. That's most of those people who are out there fishing in that water, no matter how much we tell them, those are elderly people who knew that, who did those things in their country. And I didn't mention it earlier, but when I think about other strategies on how we communicate, sometimes I have to use a translator. In that Vietnamese community, I did a door-to-door survey for 32 homes, and I went there with the Vietnamese translator because it was necessary. People were not participating when I was leaving my surveys out at their churches. I put it in their languages. It made them comfortable and made them feel as though they were included in this endeavor, which is what we should all do. That's the way we really get people to use our resources, to use the outside, to pay attention to our public health information by making sure that it's not always a negative connotation, but that you're included in our discussion. And that's pretty much how the RTCA works. Now, as you saw earlier, the topic that I had was, if we build it, why should they come? Why should they come? Well, really, to me, that's the easier part. All of what I mentioned before is the challenging part. Now, if you are a movie nista or a person who is an expert, you'll know that expression is one of the most misused expressions in the world, because people always say, you know, if they build it, they will come, which is not really what it says. It came from the movie The Field of the Dreams, and it says, if we build it, he will come. Well, for the purposes of what I do, I don't want just him to come or for her to come. I want us to go and for them to come over and to be a part of our resources. And for me, we have to make sure that people know that, as I mentioned earlier, that this is your best opportunity for getting a health benefit in your own natural environment. And secondly, that you are a part of the fabric of this nation and that you are owed the opportunity to enjoy the resources just like anyone else. So for us, we've continued our partnership with public health and with others. And earlier, I wanted to say the way that I always saw our partnership was that the RTCA, the National Park Service, we were the groom, and that the people who work in public health, you're the bride. Because really, we know that everybody really cares about the bride. You're okay if the groom shows up, but you want to see the dress, you want to see what it is, you want to see if she looks out of shape in her dress, her makeup pretty. That's who we really care about. Because public health, that's what we really care about. We want to know what the information is about how we should be eating, how long we can live, what we should do to maintain these bodies. And then you have us saying, yeah, we can help you over there. Well, what happened is that we said that we got married, but there was nobody at the wedding, nobody there at the reception. And I say this because at some point our supervisor said, you guys say that you're working with public health. Who are your partners? And we looked and we were like, we just thought it was enough to say it was a health benefit that people were going to get out and exercise. But that's not enough. It's not enough to say that people are going to get out there, because not necessarily so. Some people need a reason to get out. Some people don't care about statistics like I do. I just started really paying attention that when you're over 40, what you eat is 80% more, I guess, what controls the weight than 20% exercise. So I had to convince myself of reasons why I don't need to go outside anymore. So I said, if that's the case, then I can just watch what I eat and I can stay in because it's cold. But as a recreational planner, I can't say that. I can't, even though I believe it. I can't say that. I have to encourage people to do it because I really feel that we're doing a good thing. And although the times are tough, saying that you, especially when you say you work for the government, it's really, really a difficult and challenging time to go to communities and say, really, we want to help you. We're not the IRS. We really want to be part of the enjoyment you have in this life. But people see it differently when you say that you're from the government. And I didn't mention it earlier, but we never go into a community unless we are invited to do so. We never go because that's the last thing we need people saying, that the government is taking over their land. So to wrap all of this up, we get the idea. We get from people what they want to see happen, and we work with them to develop these strategies. And I want to just show you some of those partnership goals for RTCA and public health staff. I'm not going to read all of those, but because I know you read them while I was talking. But, you know, you have to develop a business case for it. And we have to be mindful that we're dealing with business owners, we're dealing with politicians, we're dealing with their constituents, we're dealing with just the ordinary man. And everyone has to have a different approach. But most of all, I think that our staff, because we really don't have a lot of time. Some of you might have a lot of spare time. I have a challenge adding more to my plate, but I feel like when we see that our staff are making the effort to make sure that we have a connection to the public and that we're offering help and that we're connecting, staff have to be rewarded, not necessarily financially because it's a difficult time, but even recognizing people. And that's how we keep this going. And to conclude this part, in addition to all of what I mentioned about the reasons of why they should come, we should continue our work because we are creating an environment of stewards who will take care of our land. We are creating an environment for our children to be outside and to be in a healthy space. When they put down their Game Boys and Nintendo DS, we are creating a setting so that they become those people who help preserve our resources, who utilize them, who go out there and they ride their bikes, and then they become people who are active in our cause, and they start supporting our trails, and they start listening in and showing up at our community meetings, and for me, that's it. So are there any questions? Yeah. What we we've been doing is we've been a part of organizations who participate in that greening process. And we always have the discussions about greenways and trails and I guess our term, we have to be careful with our terminology. A few years ago, when we used a discussion about greening or greenway development, it became another heated debate about what we're going to do to everyone's land, and no one saw the value of greening and planting more trees and developing our greenways. It took all away from all the definition. So as far as what the RTCA does, we only move at the direction of the city and parish. So if they have green teams or people who are interested in the greening concept, then we move forward. And if they don't, you know, we can suggest some things. But if not, then we don't. But that's not primarily our goal when we say, the green. I'm not sure what happened all in your session. Which session was it? Do you know? Were you in that one? I'm not familiar with that. I'm sorry, I don't know. But when we say we just move the way that the community wants us to, and we're very cautious about. It sounds crazy, but we're very cautious about saying greening and some task, and we just operate with however the community says we're going to move forward. I'm sorry. I can't say I really have dealt with it directly, because really most of the places I've dealt with have been contaminated by something. Even here in New Orleans, if any of you are familiar with the Lafitte Corridor, anybody in here ever heard of the Lafitte Corridor? Yeah. And it is a wonderful project. In the beginning, I worked with them with assisting with the development of their plan, their conceptual plan. So now it's a larger project here in an area that was formerly contaminated by chemicals. So right now they receive that think community block funding to clean the contamination out of their area. So of course, you know, that's taking a long process. That's a long process. Well, I can't remember that question ever coming up, but it's a good one, because we are always saying, can we get outside and encouraging people? I don't know if our answer is, my answer is never to just not go outside. For me, we have to move, but I can't tell you that I've had that experience where we've been in those heavy industrialized areas, or that I'm sure that someone in RTCA has dealt with it. I just have not dealt with it in that one specifically. It really has. Now I have to get prepared for it, because now that you say it, it's going to be.
You're talking about not just brownfields, but brownfield. Active industry. You're talking about active industry. Mm-mm.
It's really, for me, it has never, I know it's hard to believe in 15 years, it just really has never come up. I used to be director over Mississippi as well as Louisiana, and I just haven't. Although I've come from Birmingham, and there was an area that was highly industrialized, and that railroad park has turned into one that is a very vital part of the community. And people are outside using it. I thought I had pictures, but I think that when we had to cut it down, because I thought we had that 20 minutes, and I'm sorry, I'm wrapping it up. Okay. So I didn't have as many, that, you know, an area, still industry city, but people are out using it, and it's really, really large. But I mentioned earlier about that Lafitte Corridor, and this, I think, was just a draft of what they were doing in these areas, part of what they have to do with that cleanup. But we can talk after, but we really haven't had that experience of having to have that conversation with people with that argument. Most of the arguments that we deal with are people who don't want it on their land. You know, that's the most that we deal with. We don't want it on our property. Yeah. So we can talk. So I'll give you my card so that we can follow up. You had a question? Great question. We ordinarily go into a project with the frame of mind that we're going to be there for about 2 years. And of course, it can go over that time. We prefer that at least we start moving toward implementation. So we usually come like right to the threshold of implementation and we give the project back to the partner. However, we remain in contact with the partner so that we can see what's going on and to make sure that we have helped them develop a sustainable organizational framework to keep this project going on. And we are responsible for reporting the data with how many miles have been used, the usage, every 5 years, are referred to as our GIPRA results. And we report. So once we help a project, we're not just done. So we try to maintain a relationship. It's not the same investment of time because we have to move on to our new projects, but we do try to maintain some type of communication throughout the years. And project partners are always welcome to contact us. Sometimes when they're no longer listed as an official project, they're listed as a consultation. So, yeah.
Thank you, Ms. Paul.
You're welcome.
Thank you.